Hello and welcome to the PB&J show. I am the PB in the equation, Patrick Butler, and joining me is the J in the equation, Jesse Hutmaker, all the way from New Orleans. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself there? We got a little cold front coming through, kind of giving me a little reminiscence of a wintry Omaha day. What's going on over there?
We've got one coming through tonight, which is a bummer because I got to leave town tomorrow morning. So I'm hoping it doesn't screw me up. But needless to say, we're punching through January and I'm excited, man. I'm excited because we said we're going to have a guest and we did it. Tonight, we got a special guest joining us and I'd like to take a moment to introduce him. He's a good friend of ours. We've known him quite a long time and you can catch him on air at 102.1 in Milwaukee, WLUM. Joining us from Milwaukee is Ian McCain. Ian, how are you?
PB&J. What's up, man? How are you guys?
All right.
It's a good, name for your podcast, by the way. It's good branding.
Clever. But you know what sucks about that is, unfortunately, we're late to the dance. PB&J, for some reason, has been taken by many others in one format or another.
Is it really? Like, so if I type in PB&J into like the Apple iPod podcast thing, there's somebody that's already got the PB&J?
Luckily on the podcast side, we've got some things locked down, but it's just funny how many things are tied into PB&J for branding purposes as we continue to brand and build this empire.
Yeah. When we first started, there was a the PB and then and spelled out. And I don't think that one's around anymore because now even when I just try it from other computers not linked to mine or my house, we come up first. So I guess that's a good thing.
This is like LA Guns, man. There's like eight different bands.
Well, luckily we've kept the original lineup together so far. And
this is kind of like getting the band back together.
That's right. And actually, why don't we, that's a good jumping off point, man. Why don't we help everybody out and help them understand what your history is in radio? I mentioned everybody you're on air in Milwaukee, but what's your history in radio?
Basically, I mean, started out with you guys pretty much in Omaha at KRCK, like one of the first alternative stations in the entire country, you know, pretty much. I think at that time there was like 91X and K-Rock and maybe 99X and Atlanta and WDRE and in the New York City suburbs. But other than that, there really weren't that many alternative stations, and we were one of them in Omaha. So we started doing that back in the day. We're on Cox Cable. And then I kind of moved around a little bit. I went to Lincoln, Omaha, Kansas City, Tulsa, Des Moines, Chicago, Salt Lake City. Now I'm in Milwaukee. So, you know, it's just the life of a Bob Seger song or a DJ.
You know, though, you're lucky because, you know, we're pretty envious of you getting to play music and see bands every night if you choose. So you're kind of living the dream there for us.
It's really fun. I mean, you know, like obviously, like it's a lot harder than what you guys see on social media. You know, I'm living my best life on Facebook, but, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I mean, you know, I love music and I always have, and you guys know that, and you guys love music just as much as I do, but being able to, you know, go to these shows and stuff like that, like some of the times it's a pain in the ass, but most of the time I absolutely love it. So.
Now you bounced around a lot and gained experience along the way and kind of built yourself as far as your career has gone. You mentioned earlier something that has always stuck with me, Ian, and that is, you know, you started out with us and we were kind of messing around and getting our kicks with KRCK and alternative radio and an alternative station. And I have to be honest with you, man, I still use that terminology because it's something that I can relate to. Tell me this, since you've shifted and been able to grow in the industry, how has that term changed for you as far as being able to play certain things? Is that still a term that you would refer to? Does that mean something to you or has it shifted?
It's definitely shifted. I mean, when we did alternative at KRCK in the late 80s, early 90s, it really was something absolutely alternative, something completely different from everything else that you'd hear on the air. And then obviously Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Sponge, Bush, you know, all of those bands, Oasis, it sort of made it really mainstream. And so when alternative version 1.0 came around, it still meant something different, but corporations got involved and it just meant something a little bit different. And the corporations basically, I felt, really ruined the product because they didn't really know how to generate revenue from it. And they thought everybody that listens to this type of music just is tatted up, has black t-shirts, ripped jeans, and, you know, Converse One Stars. And that's not the case. I mean, who listens to this format is actually, you know, college educated people who have a more refined taste for better music, I guess. You know, they're not just lemmings and obviously don't necessarily just listen to what's put in front of them. These people that are fans of alternative radio go out and actually actively search for what they like. So it has changed. And then, you know, as we've moved along into the 2000s and into the 2010s and into the 2020s, what alternative radio is, at least, I'm not going to say that as far as music. I mean, there are definitely as much great music out there as there ever has been. But when it comes to alternative radio, I would call it almost like top 40 radio. That's an alternative to top 40. So there's hip hop out there, and the CHR format, Contemporary Hits Radio, top 40, they've embraced that so much that they've actually given up on a lot of artists that would have normally have been played on top 40, leaving out, you know, bands like Imagine Dragons, Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy, the 1975. There's a lot of bands out there that are very pop based that I wouldn't necessarily call Imagine Dragons like real alternative music, but it's definitely an element of music that fits part of what we're doing. It's like, we don't necessarily play all of that type of music, but Imagine Dragons fits on this format because of the sound sonically of what that is. And top 40's given up on that, and alternative has embraced it. So I wouldn't consider us really an indie type of rock station or what the format would be now, but we get to play part of that. And then the other part of that is another part of that is definitely the Imagine Dragons, Fall Out Boy part of that format. You know, it's just a piece of that puzzle.
The Hot Topic piece, if you will.
I've never heard Imagine Dragons at Hot Topic when I go there once a week.
So
usually it's the used.
So how would you describe the current state of alternative music, or, you know, basically, you know, what you're playing? I know that during the heyday of the 90s, it seemed like, you know, there was every station was playing Red Hot Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, regardless of what their format was.
I still play all of those bands, by the way.
I know you do. And then I know that we kind of saw a nosedive, and a lot of the stations were dropping off the dial. How is it now for the format?
You know, like, it did change a lot. Like, there are a lot of stations went out of business, you know, 1997, 98, 99, 2000. And then thank God for the Killers, you know, like, thank God for, you know, some of this music that came back, and it just had a different feel, like, where the Killers weren't Kid Rock, the Killers weren't Limp Bizkit, the Killers weren't Creed. You know, this was like real alternative music that brought it back and brought the entire format back. And it's huger than it's ever been. I mean, I've gotten better ratings here in Milwaukee than I've ever gotten anywhere else. And that's just not because of this is a better radio station. I had a really good radio station in Chicago. I had a really good radio station in Kansas City. I had a really good radio station in Salt Lake. But it's just better music. And we understand that now. In the 90s, with bands like Matchbox 20, we were the first you know, format, first stations to play that, even though it was very popular and definitely crossed over. But we just gave up on that. As soon as Hot AC, you know, and pop radio started playing Matchbox 20, we just stopped playing it altogether. And now when somebody plays Bastille and Marshmallow, like, there's a song out where those two collaborate. Some top 40 stations will play that, but we don't give up on that. We just, because somebody else plays it, we don't care. Like, we own that music now.
Very cool. Thank you.
Now, when are we, you know, we've had some time in, you know, as far as the history goes, coming from that alternative stage in the late 80s, early 90s. I don't know why, man, I've wondered this. When do we start to hear some of the music that we cut our teeth on, and suddenly it shifted into what would be termed classic rock?
It is now, I think. I mean, you're just not listening to the right stations. I mean, if you go and listen to any, like, any active rock, you know, which is kind of like a mainstream rocker right now, and if you listen to any classic rock, they're playing Nirvana. I mean, Nirvana's 25 plus years old at this point. You know, I mean, Pearl Jam, you know, everything's turning 30. So those radio stations that, you know, that lived, you know, in the 70s when we were growing up, and even probably up until like 5 years ago, still lived in the 70s. They're playing 70s, 80s, and now 90s. Like, it's really unbelievable. There's a radio station here called KLH, and they've always been a classic rock radio station. And so you're going to hear the Nuge, and you're going to hear, you know, Zepp and Pink Floyd, and then you're going to hear a lot of the 80s Hair. But now, where I've never heard it before, you're hearing STP, and you're hearing Nirvana and stuff. So that's all part of their format now. I mean, it's weird, but it's there.
Yeah, I mean, kind of sticking with that. I was in one of the local record stores today, and the owner there, her and I are always talking, and I'm always just curious, like, what's selling and what was hot for Christmas. And she had said to me that she was selling a lot of the 90s sub pop stuff. And I was like, well, who's buying it? You know, I go, is it people my age that are just now getting a record player, stuff like that? She goes, the majority of the people buying the stuff from the 90s are the kids that are in college, that are in high school. And, you know, people my age are the ones that are getting the newer music and still buying Fleetwood Mac. And we had a nice lengthy discussion about Fleetwood Mac, but I did find that interesting that there's a generation, what are they, two or three generations removed from us now, but they're buying the stuff that, like, we kind of became adults with. So I thought that was a very cool. And I mean, I think that bodes well for music when things like that are happening, or at least for our future.
The one thing that I think is really cool, and you hit the nail on the head, Jesse, which is there's a bunch of music that, you know, we, you know, the PB, the J, and me, Ian, have all, like, grown up with, and we all liked what I consider, like, we liked Duran Duran at the time, but we were definitely into the sub pop stuff. All three of us were. We were all into the the shoegaze movement. We all liked all of that stuff. And the thing that's funny is that was so underground. I mean, about, you know, 5,000 people will tell you they were at that fucking Ride Slow Dive show at the Ranch Bowl in 1993. And we were there because we were the people that put it on. And there were 70 people there. We know that. We know who was there. But 5,000 yeah. people always, oh, man, that Slow Dive show was so good. But you know what? It's cool to like that now. By the way, I'm happy about that. I mean, that music was never popular when it was current and we were putting it on the radio. So I'm happy that at least somebody, like, cares now. Like, when I went to the Vic last year and saw Slow Dive, I mean, it was absolutely sold out. There were definitely, you know, there were 1,800 people there, and it sold out in a week, you know, before, you know, they put it on sale 6 months before it went on, before the show. And it sold out in a week. And I went to one of those, you know, one of those shows, and it was just absolutely fantastic to see the resurgence of that. you know, I love the fact that people are into Sub Pop. Sub Pop actually put up that they have a record store in the Seattle airport, and I guess it's just people can't get enough of the Sub Pop vinyl. I mean, what a great idea, you know? I mean, I'm just happy that what was underground before, and even though it's 30 years old, the younger generation are searching that out and finding that.
Quit making us feel old, Ian. Quit making us feel old.
Well, two quick things. It was funny. My wife and I went back to her hometown to visit her family, and her nephew, who's graduating from high school, he always asked me about music, and I kind of, you know, just, we talk about it, but I play it off because I know he doesn't have access to a lot of stuff. And suddenly he said,
he doesn't have a Spotify account.
That's right. Well, he does, but he was going in the wrong direction. So I redirected him, and suddenly he kicks back with Nirvana. And I'm like, oh, man, well, if you're eating that up, I've got some stuff for you. So I literally dug out some of the promos I had and some of the bootlegs, and he just lost his mind, man. I mean, and to your point, both of your points, that generation is starting to eat that up, and it's like, wow. That's pretty cool. Now, I wanted to ask you this, Ian. You yourself, Jesse touched on it earlier, you have access to a lot of shows, whether they be in Milwaukee or the surrounding areas in Chicago. You're always attending a gig, especially festivals, man. How does that go? I mean, I know you're at Lollapalooza, among others.
Yeah, last year, I do this pretty much every year, but I had a couple extra tied in last year. Last year, I did a festival in Manchester, England in May. I did two. I did one in Newcastle, one in Manchester, over a week, you know, a couple week period. And that was fantastic. That was a life changer because they just have different things over there in Manchester, or just in England. The England music festival is just different than the American music festival. I'm going to that in a second, but then I did that. I did Summerfest, which is 11 days music festival here in Milwaukee. That's pretty fantastic. They have a ground set up that kind of look like fairgrounds, but it's all huge, ginormous stages. So I would invite the PB and the J. Anytime you want to come up, I got a spare bedroom. You guys can stay. You guys have to sleep in a king bed together, though, but that might get a little weird. But hey, man, music during the day. So.
It's actually quite normal for us, but that's okay.
And then I did a cover Lollapalooza for the radio station. So lots of interviews and lots of like after shows and stuff like that, which was very great because I will never go do a Coachella or a Bonnaroo ever again. Maybe a hangout festival. Hangouts down in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And they actually have like little bungalows on a beach that you can kind of hang out at. But I will never camp ever again. I'm just, you know, I'm old. And I want to get done with my day, and that usually incurs interviewing some bands and then going and seeing some performances. And then, you know, I want to go back home or at least go to the hotel and take a shower and sit in the air conditioning because it's summertime usually. So in Chicago, that works out. In Manchester, Tennessee, not so much. Or maybe the California desert in April, that's not so much where I want to be at. So those are great. And then what else did I cover? I covered Riot Fest last year, which is very good. I love, that's my favorite festival out of all of them. I mean, that's where you can see, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis this last year. I saw Gwar. I saw Interpol. I saw Beck. But there's just a wide range of music, but it's all alternative that I really like. So the Riot Fest guys do it upright. That's in Chicago. Then I went down to Austin for Austin City Limits, and I saw a taping of the Arctic Monkeys Austin City Limits TV special. I saw that, as well as Paul McCartney, Metallica, and then Arctic Monkeys like headlining set, plus like some other bands like the Wombats and the Breeders and stuff were all down there. So it was really good. And then, of course, here at the station, we do our own stuff. So we have our own shows that start like in late November and do like almost an entire week of shows. So like there's a lot of festivals. There's a lot of hard work that goes into it, but at the same time, man, it's like super fun. You get to see all these cool bands.
Very cool. So now, your station just got a huge exclusive. You know, I'll let you talk about that in a second, but let's go back to the festivals. Kind of want to tie two things together. You know, we're talking about alternative music and everything. It's just fascinating that those festivals sell out, you know, and it's not that they're just selling 10,000 tickets. You know, they're selling upwards of 50, 60,000 tickets a day.
More than that. Shows. Like more than that. Coachella probably sells about 500,000. I know Lollapalooza probably sells 400,000. Riot Fest probably sells maybe 150,000. It's crazy, man. Yeah, the money is nuts.
Yeah, and that speaks, I guess, you know, kind of to what we were talking about the format is very strong right now and going and getting even stronger. But let's talk about the difference between U.S. festivals and the European ones, because I know one of my bucket list things is to check out a festival in Europe. And so I just kind of want to know, since you've done both, what are the differences?
The thing that I absolutely love, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Jesse, you and I went to the first Lollapalooza together, you know, when it was traveling. Did you go to that, Pat?
Yeah, on the bus.
Yeah, we all did, right? So that going to that, like, you know, that was different, but it was so good. That was the beginning of all of this, you know. It kind of felt like, I mean, obviously the English have always had, like, you know, Leeds and Reading festivals, as well as like Glastonbury stuff. Those have been going on for centuries, it seems like. But here in the States, we haven't really had those destination festivals. Lollapalooza became that, like, back in 2006 in Chicago, you know, and then they had Coachella started in what, 1999. So it's like been really cool here in the States, and I really like that. But the European, at least in the UK sense, I absolutely just loved being over there for those things. People were so much more chill. Lollapalooza just seems like such an event, and people are so, like, they're wound up. And at the festivals in the UK, at least the two that I went to, they were super chilled out. People were, like, you were able to go up front for, like, you couldn't get up for the headliners, but you could get up during the day, you know, where here in the States, that's just, people are just going to go camp out and on the barrier the entire time. You're just not really going to get up there. But, in the UK, like, one of my favorite bands right now is a band called DMAs. They're a band out of Australia. They kind of sound, basically like they're from Manchester, England. I mean, if you can check them out, do that. And so I was able just to go right up front. They played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I just walked right up to the front and watched the entire set and danced around with a bunch of people who I didn't know. The other thing that was really, really great about the UK festivals compared to the American festivals is that nobody cares about dicks. Dicks don't matter. Dicks don't matter in the UK. And literally you can use that hashtag. Dicks don't matter in the UK. Because what they do there is, you now, like, you guys have both have gone to festivals lately, right? And or even if you haven't, did you go to the Maha Festival last year by chance? Any of that stuff?
Yeah,
they have the porta potty set up, right? And when you go to use the porta potty, you just have to pee, pretty much, right? I mean, like, if you have to take a shit at the festival, that's just not a good look on anybody. But I understand it's an emergency. But for the most part, you're gonna just have to go take a pee. In the UK, they have these things that look like giant, like, orange juicers, like, where you, like, they have the little, you can put the orange down on the thing and squeeze, and it, but they're urinals, and they're everywhere. Like, they're on the side of the stage, they're, like, by where you buy beer, they're by the, you know, like, the giant Ferris wheel. They're everywhere. And the thing is, dudes just are out peeing in the open. I mean, you're not really seeing anything. I mean, not like I was looking, but you're not seeing anything. You're not seeing anything, but you're seeing, like, the backs of people just peeing constantly. And it's fine. You just get used to it. I was a little bit taken back when I first walked in. I'm like, wait, what? They're just, like, that's just, like, right in the middle. But it's by the soundboard, and the dude's just taking a whiz. And I'm like, okay. So it took me a couple of times to kind of get settled down about it. I was a little anxious going in. But it really made everything great for the entire festival. It was very, that whole part of that thing where you're like, oh, I'm going to have to go take a pee. And now you're going to go stand in line with 175 women and like 500 dudes. And everybody's just using the same, like, 12 porta potties. These things were everywhere. And like So the women, if you actually had to go to use the porta potty, they were sparkling. They were clean. So like for the women, you know, awesome. For the men, it was great because you didn't have to like go stand in line. You just went over and did your business and went back and watched music. It was great. So nice. That's the difference. That's the main difference other than, you know, the bands were phenomenal over there. They're phenomenal over here. Just the attitudes were a little bit different. I don't understand like the security over there necessarily because they kicked me. They didn't kick me out, but they literally confiscated. I have a 2-ounce bottle of hand sanitizer. They confiscated that. And then when Noel Gallagher went on stage, somebody like started lighting off bottle rockets. I'm like, how the hell bottle rockets into the festival? I can't even bring in hand sanitizer. So I don't really understand how it completely works over there, but I liked it.
Very cool. Nice. I agree, man. I had the chance to be in Amsterdam last year, and they have these urinals who pop up on the sidewalk at night, and then they go down in the morning when the sun comes up. And it was fantastic for us, man. As we went to different pubs, we could walk through and just stop, take a piss, and keep moving.
And nobody cares, right? So
no,
like, if you walk by and you saw somebody like a man with his that was using the thing, you're just seeing the back of him anyway. It's not like he's exposing himself, right? But it's just interesting. I found it very interesting that we're, as an American culture, still kind of what would you call that? Just kind of closed off for that, or very,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Prudish when it comes to that business.
Yeah, I also think that was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Paris that's proposed putting them up on the, just on the streets, but they're also supposed to be disguised like as works of art. So you'll look at this thing and look like a work of art, but it's actually a urinal, and you go and do your business. I mean, I think it's brilliant. It really, really work out well here.
Instead
of people just pissing in the streets.
Why don't they have that in New Orleans?
Open container, man.
If anybody needs that, it's New Orleans.
Yeah, I figured you just piss on the street and they'll clean it up. Anyway,
now, Ian, you've done a lot of interviews, either post-show or pre-show, with bands, and had the opportunity to hang out and be in and amongst bands because of your role in the radio world. But tell me this, man, we're dying to know. You've had to have some interesting interactions with some bands. I mean, and I'm not talking the normal shit either. Just something's got to stand out here.
Absolutely. I mean, well, you know, I can't even imagine. I haven't ever counted how many bands I interview in a year, but it's probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 every year. So this is like there's a lot of interviews that happen, but there are definitely are times where stuff has gone strange for sure. One of the times was a long time ago. This was maybe, I think like 2002. Or 2003, I was at a station in Salt Lake City. I was doing afternoon drive, and we had a chance for a media junket with Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. Now, the way that this works is normally, like a guy like you know, Liam Gallagher or Fred Durst or you know, anybody that you can think of, Johnny Cash, whatever. They'll go and they'll sit in a room in LA with a headset on, and then they'll have somebody there that's an assistant, and they'll just tell you they're going to talk to Ian, he's in Salt Lake City, or you're going to talk to Dan in Denver, or you're going to talk to Pat in Omaha. And they basically just kind of feed them who they're going to talk to, and then they do these quick interviews, like all one on top of another. So there's probably like 15 radio stations they talk to all at one time. And so Fred Durst was going to do this. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, let me talk to Fred Durst. I want to talk to that guy. So anyway, we set up an interview with him. And they had just put out this album. I can't remember what that was then. It was their 2003 album. And for some reason, I had listened to it and I had like picked up on a couple of samples that they had thrown in there, and they were great. They had like the Fat Boys, like, was a sample in there. I think they had a Pantera guitar riff in there that they used. So like there was a bunch of different things kind of within that. I'm not saying that I love Limp Bizkit. I'm just saying, you know, get the opportunity to do this. I'm going to say yes. It's definitely compelling. At the time, the guy was dating Britney Spears. So he comes on and I mentioned these samples. I'm like, I'm picking up on this stuff. And I'm kind of like, yeah, you got these things kind of going on in your rhymes and stuff like that. And I get off and I'm thinking, that's fine. And I go back into my office and my phone rings and it's the Treasure's management. And they go, Ian, you did a really good job. Yeah, we really like that, man. That's great. That's great. He loved that. He loved that. He's still talking about that. In fact, he's not even doing that other interview yet. He's out just kind of hanging out, and he's just like, that was great, high five. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. So we get off the phone and they call back about, I don't know, the next day, and they go, hey, Fred Durst wants to fly to Salt Lake City and he wants to come in the studio and do your show with you. I was like, All right, make it happen. So the day of comes, and the management shows up before he does, because he's flying in off of the airport. They get there and they say, okay, so there's certain topics that are off limits. Don't talk about Britney Spears. Don't talk about, you know, maybe like the band breaking up. Don't talk about this and that. Don't talk about this. Don't talk about that. Don't talk about Woodstock 99, you know, where he was like writing on a piece of the security fence, I think, at some point. I don't know. That was bad. And so I said, yeah, no problem. So he shows up and we go in the studio and he's like, are you going to interview me? And I go, not really. I'm just going to kind of like turn on the microphone and we'll just kind of talk. And he goes, okay. So then we just started talking and I didn't mention anything. I was just like, I'm here with Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. He's got a new album out. I think we played like that first single. That was like the first 10 minutes of the interview. Oh, by the way, they also said he was supposed to be there for 30 minutes, and then he was there for about 2 hours and stayed in the studio, and he talked about it. I didn't mention anything. He just brought up everything. So he brought up Woodstock 99. He brought up about what, like, making out with Britney Spears is like. He did all of this stuff, and it was pretty amazing and pretty mind-blowing. And like one of the things I think that he liked a lot was during that interview, I go, are you listening to any new music? Because he's kind of an A&R guy. He's very, I know that he gets a bad rap, but I'll say this, and I'm not really sticking up for the music, but he's a smart guy because I don't really think he's a great musician, but he's a really good like A&R guy. He's signed a lot of really good bands to Interscope Records. So he has his own office in the LA offices of Interscope. So he was like, yeah, I got these bands that I'm kind of checking out. I've just signed these guys. And so he ended up playing a couple of those bands on the air in the 2 hours that we were on. And he really liked that a lot. So then he ended up getting my phone number from the label. And then like 2 weeks later, I'm driving in my car, like a Saturday afternoon, and my phone rings and it's an LA number. And I'm just like thinking it's like probably a record guy. I'm like, hi, hello. He's like, Ian! Like, yeah, he's like, Fred Durst. Oh, hey, dude. How'd you get this number, Fred? So, I had a car conversation with Fred Durst. You know, for some of these people, I'm sure that it doesn't really matter, but for me, that was like mind blowing. It's like when you think about that, you're like, Fred Durst called my cell phone. When you really think of that, it's bizarre.
Very cool. Very cool. And, you know, now I feel honored that you take my calls when I call. So, you know.
It's only because you're the only one that I know has a New Orleans area code. So,
well, look, Ian, we would love to keep doing this, and we'll probably have to do another one somewhere down the line. But we have a thing we do every podcast called the Punch List, and we go through and we talk about what we're watching, what we're reading, what we're drinking, and did I say, and what we're listening to, most importantly. Would you like to join in with us on one?
Absolutely. I'd be honored.
All right. Well, we're going to start off with you, and we're going to start off with what are you watching?
A lot of things, actually. But what I just saw this last week, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. Is it supposed to be cool? Because this is not definitely not cool.
Oh, it can be whatever. We have our guilty pleasure.
I'm sorry to say this, but I happened to actually see that movie, Mary Poppins Returns, with my girlfriend, and it wasn't good. I was kind of lost and felt depressed in the middle of the movie. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. So after that, I needed to cleanse the palate. And for Christmas, I got a DVD box set of Rudy Ray Moore's movies. So it's every single one of the Dolomite movies, all 8 of them in a DVD box. So I've been cleansing the palate from Mary Poppins with some Dolomite.
That's a nice contrast there. That's very cool. Pat, what are you watching?
Man, I two things. I finished up The Innocent Man on Netflix, a crime documentary, true crime documentary about these two guys who were found guilty for murder in a small town in Oklahoma. And John Grisham actually wrote, it's his only nonfiction book that he's written. And he actually helped the group that helps people in prison who are wrongfully accused. And it's just stunning, man. As you watch this, you just realize how many people get railroaded. And a lot of it's small town politics and, you know, the police force. Some of them are crooked. They're doing crap like that. And you just feel for these guys because they built a compelling case. And and when you walk away, you're like, that sucks. Those guys have been serving time for 30 years and for nothing. So I watched that, and to kind of brush that off, I started watching a show on Hulu called Lodge 49, and I'm just getting into it, but it's definitely interesting. And it's basically about this unemployed, just loser guy, surfer guy in California, and he stumbles into this lodge, like a Elks Lodge, and he's got nothing going for him, so he figures a way to get something happening would be to join the lodge. So it's actually pretty entertaining, man. So that's how I'm bouncing things off. How about you, Jesse?
I'm kind of late to the game on this one, but diving into Succession on HBO. You know, I know you watched it and you recommended it, and it's one of those that I think we could watch all the episodes all at once, because we'll watch one and then we'll like, do you want to watch another? Yeah, we can fit another one in. It's great. I can definitely see that how Kieran Culkin got his Golden Globe nomination for it. Just great writing, very witty. You know, there's a lot of elements that we all kind of have those thoughts about. And to lighten it up, since everybody else lightened things up, I started watching this faux reality show called Almost Royal. It's on the BBC America, and it's just bizarre. These two, they play off as a brother-sister British family members that are the 50th and 51st in line to be king or queen. And they go all around America, and the American people don't know it, but they just act very, it's one of those just, you know, light, fluffy pieces to watch. So been watching that as well. Let's switch it up to reading. Ian, what are you reading?
Well, so back in 2015, I went back to college full time. So I've been doing that for a while. I'm going to graduate this May. And yeah, thanks, man. No, it was like a life goal, you know, like I got close, you know, when I first went, and then I got into music and radio and was like, why would I do this when I'm just going to, I love radio, you know? So I just went when I had to go. But anyway, so there's like a bunch of electives. So I've already taken all of my major courses. I've taken all of the core courses. The only thing left are these couple of electives. And so I'm taking music electives. And so one of the things that I'm taking this semester that I have to read is this huge book on the history of hip hop. And it's awesome. I mean, like, it's all about just how it all began in the, you know, mid 70s and then went into the late 70s and exploded with, you know, African Bambaataa and Curtis Blow, and how that has kind of all Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, of course, like all of those things. How that has basically led to pop music in all different genres, you know, like how certain things, how we all just feed off of each other. Like we were talking about with indie rock, you know, it's like there are hip hop elements in a lot of that music. Also, like, there's a lot of, you know, funk and early, like, mid 60s beats that are like repurposed into what we just consider like amazing, like, hip hop beats. But those were just James Brown's drummers, you know, back in the 60s, you know, that were doing like funky drummer and stuff like that. So it's really a great book. I've just kind of started. I'm about, you know, 50 pages in. This thing's probably like 400 or 500 pages. But it's great, like, so far. Like, I'm just really excited about, like, learning about and reading about all of this, the inception of hip hop and rap.
Very cool. I don't know if you've watched, and I think it's on, Pat, you'll have to correct me on this.
Netflix.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. There's a history of rap and hip hop. I think it's 5 parts. And they go through the beginnings, and then they go through the different cities. It's a great piece too. You might.
Have you ever seen that thing on VH1 that was called? I can't remember what that one. What was the VH1 one called? I've seen that on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm definitely going to do that now.
Yeah, you definitely should, because it's no holds barred on that one.
It's worth it because they. What I love about that one, Jesse and I have talked about it before, is they keep a consistency with the host, and he literally breaks it down by boroughs in New York or by different geography in the country. And they did a pretty thorough job, man. And the interviews are fantastic. It's worth a shot.
This is this thing that I'm referencing is called "And You Don't Stop: 30 Years of Hip Hop." It was from 2004, directed by Richard Lowe and Dana Hines Perry. And basically what this is like, it's an overview like that, but I think you can still find a couple of the episodes on YouTube, but the whole thing doesn't exist. I've been trying to find it. If I can find it on DVD, I'll rip it for you guys and let you guys watch it. But it's "And You Don't Stop: 30 Years of Hip Hop." It was a VH1 production. It was great. Yeah,
I saw that one, and it's a great one. But the one on Netflix is really good. I believe they even have Bushwick Bill on there. I know they interview a few of the Ghetto Boys. They talk about, I mean, they go through, and it's really thorough. I mean, it's one of those. Beth was watching it with me, and she was like, "Oh my God, they give you so much." So even if you're someone that is not familiar with hip hop or rap beyond what you just hear on the radio, they do a good job of giving you the background and giving you the picture of things and how everything came about. So you should definitely, when you're done with your book, check that out. I highly recommend that. And speaking of hip hop, I've been putting off reading this book until I had time to just crush it, but I decided I waited too long. I started on the BC Boys book, and
yeah,
the problem with it, every time I start on the book, I got to get out the albums, and when I get out the albums, then I can't read because I'm sitting. Yeah. I can't read, and so but
you're too busy yelling into your speaker.
And I was like, "That's right, I'm the Eggman."
Remember Michael Diamond? No, I'm Clarence.
Yeah, so I started on that, and I'm gonna have to do it where I just put where I'm in a room where I can't get any music or anything, and just sit and read it all in one sitting. Well, what's going on with you, Pat? What you been reading?
I finally finished Keith Richards' book, Life. Great book. He had to have assistance, because I don't know how he pulled all that detail into that book. But And if he did, I am really impressed. Because it's thorough, man, and it's really well written. It's entertaining too. So, just finished that up, and then been
wouldn't
reading.
Wouldn't that be funny? After all of these years, after like 55 years of being in the business, like we find out that Keith Richards is like a poet laureate,
or he keeps a diary. He has like a diary, a journal from every like night.
Exactly. That would be great.
I would love that.
Overall, that would be, I would only want to read maybe two other people's diaries above Keith Richards, and one of them would be probably Wilt Chamberlain's. But other than that.
I mean, that'd be fantastic. He'd be the one having the last laugh. I mean, but nevertheless, man, that book is great. So I've been reading that. And shall we shift to our favorite topic, music? Listening. I'll kick it off here since I'm on the roll, and I brought it up to you before, and I love this band, and I kind of slept on it early in 2018 and picked it up late. It's Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever, and they're from Australia, and that record is so damn good. It reminds me of so much, and I can't stop playing it. So that's been on constant rotation. Ian, what about you, man?
There's so much like music that's, I mean, it's one of those things where you would think like I'm old now and I would just be tired of listening to new music, but you know, it's January now. And so all of the releases for first quarter come out. Everybody here worked at a Best Buy or a record comp or record label or a record store. So we all know that like first quarter is always pretty fun. Right. And yep. All these new records are coming out right now. Like a couple days ago, I got a new Catfish in the Bottleman. And that's great. I've been a big fan of them for a long time, and it's been a couple of years since they've had new material out. They've got a new album coming out this spring, and the difference is normally the thing that I love about them is they're a Welsh kind of Liverpool, Manchester kind of type of band, and I love the fact that they are still a rock band when people are going, well, rock's dead, and they're still a rock band, and I love that they have just raging guitars in their music. Great sense of, you know, sensitive lyrics. They're just really well-rounded. The thing about it is they've always been really raw. And so this new single just came out on Tuesday, and it's just the sharp edges are kind of filed off. They're definitely, it's a little bit more slick, a little more smooth. And I thought I was going to be upset about that, but actually I've listened to it a few times now. I'm into it. There's another band that I knew about just because they were like kind of a Spotify YouTube like baby, and people were into them called Houses. They had a song out about maybe like 2016, like early 2016, and they just released a new album out, and they have a song called Fast Talk, and I can't get enough of that. It's like one of those earworms that you get in your head and you're just like, what, like I want to not like this song as much as I do, but you get in the car and you turn it on and then you have to just rewind it and play it again. It's like one of those types of things. So I, you know, there's a lot of like new stuff that's out there, but those are two things that I'm kind of just really digging right now.
I believe, nice. I believe Houses were on a soundtrack or TV show a few years ago because
yep, you're right.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing them. So for me, I was doing a little alphabetizing of the record collection and organizing it, and I completely forgot about a purchase I made in Omaha on the recommendations from Jeff at Drastic Plastic of a band called The Cheetahs, their self-titled album. And it's shoegaze. It's beautiful. I can't stop listening to it. And I just, there's always that thing for the shoegaze music for me that just, it gets me, even if it's bad, I still am drawn in, but I'm really, really loving that album, and it's older, but I still like it. And then Mercury Rev and Hope Sandoval do a cover for the Bobby Gentry tribute coming out, and I can't think of the song title off the top of my head, but the song for that, I've listened to that a few times, and I really like that. So I'm excited for that compilation, that tribute compilation that comes out in a few weeks. So that's what's been in my headset besides the Beastie Boys when I'm reading the book. Finally, something near and dear to all of us. Ian, what are you drinking?
I've been drinking the same thing since May, which is weird because I'm really kind of a I'm a vodka soda lime type of guy. That's just what I drink all the time. It's low in calories and refreshing.
Gotta watch that waistline.
Yeah, you haven't seen it lately. Apparently, I've apparently been dipping Snickers into the vodka soda lime. But I went over to Manchester, and at one of the festivals, they had this spiced rum that's darker than any of the rums that I've seen, like that are commercially available, really over here, called Kraken rum. And like, I thought you could pick it up over here, but I just couldn't remember when I went over there. They started making these things called Dark and Stormies, or I think that's the name of what they call them here, Dark and Stormies. They have this thing called the Perfect Storm is what it was called. And literally they just muddle a lime. They put this rum in there, and then they put a really nice spiced ginger beer on top of it and shake it up. And it is, it's basically like a Moscow Mule with the spiced rum. So if you're a fan of Moscow Mules, this kind of goes in just a little bit of a more spicy direction. I was really, I'm a fan of it now. I don't drink it all the time. I drink it on special occasions, but it's really good.
Very good. Speaking of your ginger beer, if you're ever, I think Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, it's the old New Orleans rum company. They make a ginger roux, and it's got the ginger beer and the rum. It's a great to mixer. You can drink it straight, but I like to mix it if you happen upon it in one of those stores.
That's nice. I was gonna say, you know, so I told you that I couldn't find that anywhere. I came back over and I was like, well, I'm probably gonna have to go to some specialty liquor store to find it. And then I was like buying underwear at Target and they had it on the shelf, so apparently it's available.
Pat, on that note, what are you drinking?
Commercially available now. Well, first of all, when Ian kicked that off, I thought he was going in another direction when he started off by saying, I've been drinking the same thing since, and I was waiting for like 92 to drop.
What was I drinking in 92?
Old English, Mickey's White. Yeah, Mickey's or Old English.
OE.
OE, it's
right. Oh man, those were really fun days, by the way. I have to admit. Like that, the nothing beats an OE buzz.
Chasing it with the Jägermeister.
Oh man. We were dumb. We were dumb.
But we're still above the ground.
But it was sure fun. No man, on the recommendation of you, Jesse, I picked up a bottle of Reka vodka from Iceland, and also commercially available. But what I will say is that's a damn fine vodka, man. That's smooth. I've been mixing it. I've tried it straight up, neat. The vodka doesn't mess around, and it sure is smooth, man. So I appreciate that tip. Reka vodka, smooth.
Can you find that next to the Fruit of the Looms at your Target store there?
Well, I'm not. I don't know if I'd go that far. He's got a Dark and Stormy, and I've got a Sunny and Bright going.
Yeah, those are nice. That Reka is really good. I've had that before. That's great.
Yeah. I like to drink at Courtyard Brewery. Pat, I took you there, and it's one of my favorites. And one of customers I was helping at the store, we got to talking about beer, and you know, he hadn't tried Courtyard Brewery, and I was like, you got to go. And the next thing I know, a couple of days later, he brings in a growler from Courtyard of It's not in the syllabus, which is an American IPA. And I was like, holy shit. You know, he's like, yeah, I thought, you know, me and you and a couple other of the coworkers could sit and have a beer. And I'm like, all right. And, you know, I only knew this guy because I sold him a bike, and we just started talking stupid shit while we were waiting for the bike to be checked out. He was like, oh, yeah, and he was telling me all about his good time there. And so that was the last a beer I've had, and I think I'm going to pour myself a vodka tonic that I did not find next to the Fruit of the Wombs at Target, but I think that's something to have when we're done with this podcast.
Nice.
You know, well, you guys are making me completely just freak out right now because I'm going on 2 weeks now, no booze, because I'm doing dryuary. So this sucks to talk about this. I know. I decided to do it. Like we did New Year's Eve, and I said, okay, that's it. That's it. I'm going on my. I'm not a resolution guy, but I just said, okay, I'm going to go a month. I'm gonna make this happen. And now we're talking about old English.
Well, you could have said you've been having iced tea or lemonade, and it would have been totally fine. We've been like, oh yeah, we like to have that too. Yeah, yeah. It goes. Let me ask
you this. Do you guys go to bars very much? You guys kind of hang out a little bit here and there, right? I mean, can you go to the bar and not drink? Like, is that a thing? I've never done that. Like, where I've just gone and just been social. I could go and get like a soda, you know, water with lime. I could do that and just kind of walk around and have fun. But you're definitely not having as much fun as everybody else at the bar.
It just depends. Now, I mean, I'll have my drink or three, and then when I know we're getting close to leaving, you know, then I can switch it up. But like, I just can't go if somebody's in town visiting and wants to have, you know, they want to go to the bars. I can't just go and say, sure, I'll sip on some soda water all night. You know, no, I can't do that. And you know,
like when you go back to Omaha, does everybody just buy you drinks except for Steve?
Truth. Well, oh man, I was about to bust one open on that.
It just, you know, it, yeah, I mean, I get bought drinks, but I also buy drinks, and I think Pat and I forget, and we're buying each other rounds, and you know, then somebody says, oh hey, let's do shots, and you know, then trouble. And but yeah, no, it's usually those kind of things, because you know, Omaha's so spread out, and you know, my parents live, you know, in the middle of nowhere, so it's hard when you're drinking in Omaha and you know, you got to drive home. You can't just keep drinking. You have to cut it off. And so, I mean, I think that kind of helps if that means anything.
It does. last January, Ian, I in support of a friend who was knocking off for 30 days, he asked me to join him. So I said, yeah, man, I'll do it. And I didn't realize at the time, like literally I had to force myself to do this. There were times that I had to catch myself and go, no, you're not going to do it. And I made it 25 out of the 30 days. which was good, because he actually needed the support, and we helped each other through it. And I had to admit, man, it was tougher than I thought. Especially when you start talking about it like we are.
Exactly. No, it's, you know, I gotta say, like, I feel pretty good about it. I know I've saved a little bit of cash here and there, and hopefully, like, I drop a couple of pounds, just like loose vodka weight, you know, that'd be nice.
Right on.
I guess I won't send you pictures of me having a beer or having vodka. Yeah, all the time.
Well, you know, that's who we are, you know, is like as people. And so, like, on a Friday night, like, I just get constant like Snapchats and like Facebook messages and stuff of people are out at the bar, man. Like, I got my friend in Bellingham, Washington, who sends me stuff. I got people in Salt Lake. They're like, hey man, what's up here? I'm drinking. Are you drinking? It's like, no,
here's my soda water.
Oh man. Well, listen, Ian, we can't thank you enough for taking time out to join Jesse and I in the PB&J show, man. Seriously appreciate you doing this
anytime. You know, like, anytime you guys want to have me on, it's awesome. I love talking to you guys. Like, you guys have like awesome things to talk about. You love good music, you like good liquor, you read good books, so it's all good, man. Anytime you want to have me on, I'll put aside some time and be on with you guys.
Awesome.
Well, we appreciate it, and like I said, man, if you guys are in Milwaukee, listen to 102.1 WLUM and catch Ian McCain. Does a fantastic job. Jesse, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Thank you for being on, Ian. And we want to thank all of our listeners. And again, the PB&J show is a Find the River production. Thanks, and we'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.